Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Jeff Epton. Hello, Jeff.
How you doing, Vic?
Wonderful. Jeff, you know, I haven't talked to you in so many years, and I have very fond memories of your time in Dayton, Ohio, but I understand now you're living in Washington, D.C. What have you been up to?
Fee, in a second, let me just say it's probably been about 15 years, maybe a little less, and I have enormously fond memories of being in Dayton and the project that Marianne McMullen and I had a hand in, the Dayton Voice, and the community that we ended up linked with as a result of the Voice, which was later Impact Weekly. But what we're doing now, I mean, Marianne is a deputy assistant secretary in the Administration for Children and Families in Health and Human Services, works for the Obama administration. And I am writing and trying to keep from plunging us into trouble by being employed in a complex organization.
Okay. And you've just published a book.
Yeah. The end of last year, Wild Once and Captured. It's a book of poetry and a couple of essays.
And I love the way you introduce this book. You have a fairly long piece right at the beginning where you give readers a sense of where all this comes from, your inspirations, people that you're inspired by, and it's called If I Am a Poet. Do you want to talk about some of that?
Right. Well, and it's interesting that you started with that because, in fact, there is a huge error in that If I Am a Poet part. But basically, I mean, what I was trying to do with the introduction was to frame my own poetry in a way that might make it easier to relate to for people who don't ordinarily read poetry. So I wanted to talk about how I came to this and maybe explain a couple of those poems. But in that introduction, I attribute the fact that I'm writing poetry now to stuff that happened in high school, if we'd be talking like 1964 or something, almost exactly 50 years ago. And there were three people who made principal contributions to that. One was my high school English teacher, Mr. Rast. I'm since finding that almost nobody I went to high school with that I'm still in touch with remembered him or remembered his name. They all remembered how he looked, which is a little bit like Ichabod Crane, in any case. But there's Mr. Rast, my English teacher, Geoffrey Chaucer, the author of Canterbury Tales, and in particular the prologue to Canterbury Tales, which Mr. Rast had us memorize, and a classmate, Jill Littlewood, who I claim to remember five words that she wrote that stuck in my mind. Mud Luscious and Puddle Wonderful, that she wrote for a poem. The truth I've since found out, since I published this book and got in touch with Jill Littlewood, that she didn't write those words at all, that those five words are from E. E. Cummings.
No wonder you were so impressed.
Well, here's the thing. Jill immediately assumed that my memory was accurate and that she, at 15 or 16 years old, was busy plagiarizing poets. I have a feeling, I think it was really gracious of her to, like, be embarrassed by the details of my memory, which I think has about the same value of other recovered memories, which is at best dubious, and in her case, probably incorrect. I probably ran across those words, Mud Luscious and Puddle Wonderful, down the road a piece after high school, reading some E. E. Cummings, and somehow, maybe I mean, it's very possible that I remembered a poem from that she had written about her Hyde Park neighborhood after a rainstorm, and it didn't have those five words in it. But maybe it had a kind of grace and a kind of vividness that were captured by those words, and I conflated.
Well, I don't see it as an error. I think it's kind of sweet, and I like hearing the background. Let's just say it was something that one of our former presidents would call it as you misremembered.
Well, yeah, I think that's that'll work. And I'll tell you, no one else has had a problem with it. And everybody has sort of felt like, well, there must be some meaning to the fact that I associated that with Dylan. But in any case, I mean, the whole thing, what happened in my junior or senior year in high school, whenever it was exactly, didn't make me a poet by any means, but it worked on me for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And I remember Rast reciting after he had us memorize the prologue. We didn't, most of us, get very far in it. I myself maybe got 16, 18 lines that I remember still. But he did the whole thing one day in class. And it's, you know, it's Middle English. It's not necessarily easy to understand. It wasn't the language of the street when I was a kid, and it's not the language of the street now. But when Rast recited it, I was just stunned, because here he was, an adult, doing something that suddenly was interesting to me as a kid who was willing at the time, and always had been willing to remain a kid, and saw no particular value in grown-ups. Well, this guy reciting that poem, the prologue, really impressed me. And I think it's worked on me all these years, and I still remember some of those lines. One that April with the sure suta, the drucht of March hath pierced to the rudder, and stuff like that, and on and on.
I had the same kind of teacher, and we had Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, and it's just magical. I still remember those same lines myself. They just stick with you, don't they?
Yeah. What he said is, you'll be grateful for this assignment when you're on guard duty one night or something like that. You know.
Well, Jeff, would you like to read one of your poems for our listeners, just to give them a flavor, a sense of what you have in this?
Oh, sure. There's one poem in the book, which is kind of my current favorite. It's called "The Courage All Around," and if I could take a minute to give you the background behind that poem.
Okay.
After we moved to D.C. and I was starting to spend more time writing poetry, I started going to a bookstore here called Busboys and Poets. And the line being a phrase from Langston Hughes, from a poem, not from Langston Hughes, a description of Langston Hughes, who was waiting a table in D.C. somewhere, and he met, I forget who the guy was, now a relatively famous literary figure, a writer, who wrote in his column the next day about meeting a busboy poet when he was out eating dinner, and it had turned out to be Langston Hughes reciting a poem for this guy, and this guy writing about how wonderful it was. Anyway, this
was it Walter Winchell?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
He had a column, huh?
Well, hold on a second. Let's, while I'm talking, I'll also Google busboys and
okay.
See what it tells. But
you're multitasking.
Yeah, well, I just got us boys, so I'm not multitasking that well. But Busboys and Poets, here it is. Anyway, Busboys and Poets, a restaurant, it also has a community room in which all sorts of events go on, and it has a weekly open mic night. Mm-hmm. I'd go to the open mic night with my staff, and, you know, and largely 14th and U Streets in D.C. is in Northwest D.C. at the time the restaurant was founded, you know, was an historic African-American neighborhood that was beginning to change, but it's funky. It had a lot of bar restaurants with live music, open mic nights. And the crowd that came to Busboys and Poets open mic night was almost entirely rappers.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the last few times I went, it was all rappers with the exception of me.
So you blended in the best you could, huh?
Yeah, which was notably not particularly well. But people were very respectful and very positive. Not just a racially different group and a different group of poets, but also, by and large, much younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd be really respectful. And anyway, I'd get up at the mic and I'd do one or two poems because you got 5 minutes to do it, and then but on either side of that, I'd be sandwiched in like 10 other poets or something, hip hoppers, rappers, and stuff, and I'd watch them. And sometimes these kids would be like, sometimes they'd be high school kids, sometimes they'd be working folks, 20, 25, sometimes a little bit older, but always watching this style of like spoken word performance, I would be like stunned at how much of themselves these people would put out there, whether they were novices or really experienced people, and how much of themselves they put out there, how much like passion they put into telling their own story or sharing their vision of a different world. And I learned much more being in the audience at Busboys and Poets than that audience ever learned from me. And I learned, among other things, a little bit more about what I needed to do to connect to others with my poetry. But the poem, The Courage All Around, is based on originally watching these people just tell their stories honestly and passionately.
Okay.
But it begins with a little bit about my own son. I have a couple of older children from even before I was in Dayton, but I have one younger one who was born in Dayton in 1998, just the year before Marianne and I left town. And a few times when he was taking drumming class, he'd walk over the metro in our neighborhood with his drum and a lunchbox. And he'd drum, and, a couple times he came home with, like, $20. And, and he was like a kid. He was a little boy. And I'd watch him. And I wouldn't get in the way of what he was doing, but I'd follow him. I'd watch him. I'd make sure he was okay.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, The Courage All Around. Late night honest with myself, my boy shames me. The courage he shows, drumming at the metro, spare change pours in, folded bills drifting like snow covering his lap. 10 years old, first sharing a buck with a woman who asks, then shooing her away when she won't stop asking for more. He goes about his business, a lion heart tending his pride of intentions, while I flinch at the work before me, at stepping up before you, at speaking my piece. But where he's heading, with heart and skill and the company of others, colleagues like you, with an instinct for movement and reach we can believe in, that place, that thought swells my heart. The world you will build beckons and beguiles, and because the heart is a complicated thing, I feel no shame here. I feel the courage all around.
I get a whole different dimension hearing you read that than reading it on the page. I understand you're going to be in town, in our area, back for a little visit in August, and there's actually a couple of events where people can come out and hear you read poetry and check out your book. Can you give us some information on that?
Yeah, and let me stipulate that, the first one on Saturday, August 17th, begins around 5 o'clock with a potluck, and it is in a private home, but it's a completely public event. It's the home of Donna Hinkle and David Hurwitz. the potluck dinner goes from 5 to 6:30, and then the program will begin. And hopefully, we're going to get, besides me reading poetry, we'll get a couple of the people who used to work at The Voice, who were musicians then and are musicians now, to make it much more of a mixed event. Anyway, it's at 447 Cherry Drive in Dayton. That's 45405. It's just off North Main Street, about a mile north of downtown.
Okay.
And then on Sunday, August 18th, we'll have another event at Sam and Eddie's Open Books in Yellow Springs. And if there's anything that needs to be said about how to get there, perhaps you should say it. But that
and program, what time is that?
That program will begin at 1 o'clock.
And that's in King's Yard in Yellow Springs?
Right, right, right.
Wild, Once, and Captured. The title of your book comes from a poem about, what was it, a performance by Annie Lennox that you were watching?
No, it wasn't a performance. It was just at the time listening to, for a while I was on a very strong Annie Lennox kick and listening to a lot of her CDs and stuff, and I was just like always carried away listening to her voice, and there was always such a strong visual component listening to her sing, listening to her tell stories, that these images would just flash before me frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you want, I'll take a go at that one.
If you want, or read whatever you want. You know, there was a poem in the book that I think you probably laid it out sideways because you have these wonderful long lines. You probably wanted each line to be complete on the page. It's called Always Jewish, Lately Palestinian.
Sure,
this is a wonderful kind of autobiographical poem.
Okay, well, yeah, I'd be happy to read that. Always Jewish, lately Palestinian. I am Jewish because the love of others made me so. I am Jewish because I grew up on the south side of Chicago, where even my public school seemed Jewish. I am Jewish because my grandfather was oh so Jewish. I felt it then, I feel it now. I am Jewish because in my grandmother's kitchen nothing would rise, but of everything there was plenty. I am Jewish because angry Irish boys felt my Jewish nose at the end of their Catholic fist. I am Jewish because the South Shore Country Club would not let us in, though Marx also warned us against joining clubs that would have us. I am Jewish because my dad once slugged a guy who cussed a Jewish pitcher for the White Sox. I am Jewish because the Jewish God is not diminished by my disbelief. I am Jewish because Emma Goldman and Hannah Arendt were Jewish, and so was Karl Marx, and so was Groucho, and Jesus, too, for that matter. I am Jewish because of the Maccabees and Masada and Crusader violence and Spanish inquisitors and Cossack pogroms and the ghetto and the death camps, and because I also planted trees in Israel. I am Jewish because Jewish workers fight in labor struggles and because Jewish people resist racism and because, like all the world's poor Jews endure. I am Jewish because we are commanded to remember when we were slaves in Egypt, and I do. I am Jewish because being Jewish means never using violence against another except when life itself is directly threatened. That principle must never be compromised. I am Jewish because I am a child of Abraham. Palestinians, therefore, are my brothers and sisters. We are all children of Abraham. I am Palestinian because Jews, too, have been homeless. I am Palestinian because we have a future together or none at all. I am Palestinian because Palestinian yearning is so like Jewish yearning. I am Palestinian because Jews have been uplifted by the love of Palestinians. I am Palestinian because peace in Arabic and in Hebrew bestows the same gift. Although Sarah and Hagar are our separate birth mothers, I am Palestinian because we all live in the embrace of one mother and will return to her. If you summon one of us for cruel judgment, there will be no telling us apart.
Jeff Epton, reading from his new poetry collection, Wild, Once, and Captured. And some beautiful artwork in this, too.
Yeah, my niece or step-niece, Stacy Kalmanovsky, who's originally born in Belarus and made her way with her family across Europe to Chicago, where her mother met my brother, and love happened. Stacy, an artist in her own right, I asked her to see if she could come up with some drawings for the book, and it turned out that that she came up with stuff that so totally enhanced. It was like this young woman knew what I was getting at, in some cases better than I knew myself. But, you know, I'd add that that's the nature of the poetry anyway. You write something, you write your poems, you put them out there, you hope there's something in them that people can relate to, but you're not necessarily conscious of everything that you did put in there, and different readers walk away with very different things. I had one woman I knew who found herself in the poem in the book called Never Can Tell. And I'll tell you, I wasn't thinking of her when I wrote it, but after she told me that this is my poem and I read it, I realized that, you know, that I don't own this poem just because I write it. And now when I look at it, I think I'm grateful to her for having shared an important piece of herself with me.
You could see her in it after the fact. I learned a lot about you from reading this book. I learned that you're a South Sider from Chicago. You're a White Sox fan. You spent some time in Detroit. I think you were on the city council in Ann Arbor. You love walking your dog. You love the poems of Mary Oliver. You know, she's got a book coming out that you're going to love in October. It's called Dog Songs.
Have you gotten to see a review copy yet, Vic?
I have one right here in my hand.
All right. Well, hopefully when I get to Dayton, if you can show up at one of those events, you can bring the book with you.
You want to hear one of the really short poems in it?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
It's Mary Oliver from Dog Songs. This will be out in October. It's called How It Is With Us and How It Is With Them. We become religious, then we turn from it. Then we are in need, and maybe we turn back. We turn to making money, then we turn to the moral life. Then we think about money again. We meet wonderful people, but lose them in our busyness. We're, as the saying goes, all over the place. Steadfastness, it seems, is more about dogs than about us. One of the reasons we love them so much.
What's the title of that one?
How It Is With Us and How It Is With Them.
Yeah, well, it sounds like she nailed it.
Yeah, it's really a neat book. I know you're going to enjoy it. So you were on the city council in Ann Arbor. Was this back in the 80s?
In the 80s. I was on the city council for 6 years. It was challenging and interesting and fun, and I never felt though like I had accomplished what I'd set out to accomplish. I can't actually say that I had a real vision of what I wanted to do either, but you know, it wasn't until after I got to the Voice, or till we started the Dayton Voice, Marianne, and four or five other people as were part of the original founding group, Darlene Soans, Gordon Heller, Noreen Wilhelm, this group of people, and we began to articulate a vision and the voice, I finally was able to articulate what I have always hoped would motivate me when we came up with an understanding of what the purpose of the voice was. And it was to treat working people, women, people of color, the LGBTQ community, as and others as legitimate audiences, sources, and subjects of the news.
And I miss The Voice a lot, because not only did you have these wonderful progressive ideals that you were willing to speak out for and have editorial opinions, making your statements visible to all of us, but you also had great investigative reporting, and I really miss that about that paper. That was really nice to have that while it was here.
Well, thank you, Vic. You know, we got really lucky. A lot of our stories originated with freelancers who were just, you know, they didn't have a regular job writing for anybody, and they'd be moved by some piece of information they found, and they would worry it and work it and check it out, like the Mecca investigation, the Montgomery County Community Action Agency. And I don't even remember how all of that turned out exactly, but there was demonstrated misuse of funds, and it was, you know, and it came at the expense of the communities that were supposed to be served by Mecca. And this guy, Marty Yant, who was based in Columbus at the time, sometimes writing for other alternative newspapers, came to us with a story that he'd already largely investigated. And, you know, people like that who are passionate and committed to to digging out the truth and in the interest of a larger community, they're always looking for a home. I guess now, though, with what's happened in the newspaper industry, it's pretty hard to for people like that to find a place to park their stories.
Well, Jeff, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program.
Well, I really appreciate it, Vic. Thank you.
The book is Wild Once and Captured. My guest has been Jeff Epton. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Tune in next week when we'll have another poet on the program. He's not going to be reading poetry, though. Last year we had Wayne Kustenbaum on the show with his collection of essays called Humiliation. He's got a new collection out. It's called My 1980s and Other Essays. John Waters had this to say, quote, "Wayne Kustenbaum is one of the most original and relentlessly obsessed cultural spies writing today. His alarmingly focused attention to detail goes beyond lunacy into hilarious and brilliant clarity." The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.